Bonjour, dear listeners, and welcome to Defense, the conversation about women in defense you never knew you could have. So 3 weeks ago, I traveled to Washington, D.C. to attend one of my favorite U.S. defense trade shows, Sea Airspace. And while I was there, I took the opportunity to speak with Dale Sisson, Technical Director at the Naval Surface Warfare Center Dahlgren Division, the NSWCDD, a little bit of a mouthful there, apologies, who was kind enough to spare 30 minutes of his time to speak with me about how the center recruits its engineers. And a little hint here, they start very early on. They start speaking with youth whilst they're still in high school. And how women are taken into consideration in this recruitment process. It was a very interesting conversation, one that actually had me thinking about what diversity means and perhaps also the importance of having to look at it from a much wider angle, not just about women in defense in this case, but again, much wider. What does it mean to be, you know, to have diversity in a team? I enjoyed it very much and I hope you will too. So thank you very much for tuning in and enjoy the listening. So I'm here today at Sea Airspace with Dale Sisson, Technical Director at the Naval Surface Warfare Center Dahlgren Division. So hi, Dale. Thank you very much for finding the time to speak to me today.
Sure, Alex. It's a pleasure to spend time with you as we talk about leadership. It's really the focus of mine here today at Sea Airspace. So great to open up with you.
Yes, and indeed, Jennifer was telling me that you will be presenting later today on empowering the leaders of tomorrow, and that really caught my attention. I thought this would be perfect to talk about the women in defense and what you're doing. But before we dive into that subject, could you maybe remind me and the listeners what the NSWCDD does?
Sure. We are a research, development, test, and engineering site focused on delivering cutting-edge weapon systems and warfare capability to our sailors and Marines and really our joint service partners. We have about 5,000 employees, of which 80% are scientists and engineers. Very fast-paced environment that requires a tremendous amount of innovation and focus on product delivery.
Okay. So now the million-dollar question. What is the gender balance at the moment at the NSWCDD?
Well, it varies across our organization, but I think an important statistic to point out is that 42% of our leadership team is made up of women, which far exceeds the traditional ratio in a STEM field. And with an organization that is 80% STEM, to have 42% of our leadership team to be women is very encouraging to us. Now, I will tell you, we spend a lot of time in succession planning, and we tend to look out for the entirety of our workforce for sure, and for members who aren't yet part of our workforce as we look to have world-class leaders and scientists and engineers in very critical positions for ourselves. So, you know, we take great pride in pulling from the entirety of the available talent pool. To do that, I think it's very important for folks of all walks to see themselves. They have to see themselves on your leadership board. They have to see themselves on how you act. So to recruit that talent into our organization, to retain that talent, and to grow that talent, that is certainly our focus. I will tell you, I don't know if we ever say, hey, you know, this position needs to be filled by, you know, a man or woman or whatever, but we certainly are very keen on building a diverse candidate pool that is ready to fill those key slots in our succession plan.
Mm-hmm. So many questions already on what you just said, but just for me to understand properly, when you mean succession planning, what does it mean exactly, succession planning?
Well, we're in a very dynamic environment. And, you know, so with leading a workforce of 5,000 people, it is you know, absolutely important for us to be very good at depth. Mm-hmm. You know, with that dynamic environment, our leaders, our scientists, our engineers are off tackling, you know, problems for the Navy and delivering critical solutions across the Department of Defense and really with our allied partners. So as we do that, gaps, you know, will pop up at a, you know, on a moment's notice that we need to go fill, or that our team takes on new challenges, a new warfighting challenge may arise. So having an in-depth talent base to fulfill those requires advanced planning. So that succession plan is really that advanced plan where we talk through specific positions, who may be a great candidate for that specific position, helping our workforce fill gaps in their talent base, their skill sets. You know, for me, it's a as we match our leadership team and really across our workforce, folks, the responsibilities that they carry, it starts with what's in the heart. Right. So we want our folks doing the things that they want to be doing. That is our best recruiting tool. I mean, we get to ply our trade as scientists and engineers in delivering cutting-edge technology each and every day. So that's an incredibly strong recruiting tool. Scientists and engineers go to school. They want to be scientists and engineers for the most part. Come to our organization, you get to do that. But in terms of the succession plan, we talk through the things that are both personal based, right? So the individual, ensure that, hey, this person here is a budding leader, but they haven't invested themselves in advanced education or in leadership training, or they need an experiential assignment outside of the organization. So we'll be very deliberate in creating those opportunities for our folks. We invest heavily in academic education. At any given time, we have in excess of 400 people enrolled in academic education out of our workforce that we pay for 100% for our team in areas that matter to us. So that succession planning is a combination of talking to individuals. It's also building a game plan that gets after the experiential, the academic learning, and the leadership, personal growth kind of training that it takes to have that depth in leadership. I'll give you an example. My deputy technical director is off, has been for the last 8 months, leading another warfare center in a different region of the country. So he's part of that succession plan more corporately. When he began that assignment, we immediately put our succession planning to the test and put it in place. And so we've not missed a beat. If he's listening to this podcast, he knows we appreciate it. But we haven't missed a beat with him being gone because we have talented leaders that we have invested in behind him, and they've stepped up to new roles. And each and every time we have that happen, it's always impressive to me to watch the talent base that we have and how they embrace these new roles.
So just for me to understand, because you said you have, I can't remember the number anymore, but a lot of people already studying, how do you identify the individuals? Do you start early on? Do you start in high school? Do you have talent scouts, to speak?
Yeah, great question. So our talent scouting starts about sixth grade.
Okay.
Now,
which is what age for?
Here in the United States, sixth grade, I don't know, my kids are all out of college and off on their own, so I forget, sixth graders are 12-ish years old. Okay. Matter of fact, I think it was this past weekend, we had 50-ish teams of sixth graders competing in it might have even been younger, and elementary school might have been part of that. Sometimes we'll have elementary schoolers there as well. But again, the 12-year-old time frame, sixth grade here in the United States, we'll kind of start to see that's the time where you can really influence folks towards an interest in science and engineering and STEM fields, mathematics, computer science. So we host a number of innovation challenges with our local school systems and then regionally, and then engage across the country as well. So we'll have that first set of innovation challenges, if you will, around that time frame. And we have a high school challenge that we host, so say 15 to 18, 14 to 18. And then we'll host a similar innovation challenge for college students. And when it gets to the college level, we're actually offering financial prizes that are very significant for the students, and we get nationally leading universities send teams in to compete. So we're hoping to cultivate a relationship with a number of folks who would be interested in STEM fields as early as 12 years old, maybe even earlier, and then hope to retain that relationship with them as they progress through school. We have a number of internship opportunities within our organization and across our warfare centers nationally that are very attractive to folks. And for example, we hired over 200 interns into our organization alone last summer from, again, leading science engineering universities in the United States of America. So it's not a one contact and done kind of model. We invest a lot in our STEM programs. Matter of fact, talked to my STEM program leader on the way out the door as we drove up here to this event today about the successes that we had just this past weekend and reaching a number of young personnel and hoping to get them interested in STEM fields.
No, so the question I had was, a lot of the research, so especially at the moment I'm reading a book on this, says that, you know, girls, little girls, can be interested in math just as much as boys at the beginning, but when they reach 7, 8, 10, you start seeing a gap where they think, oh, math is a boy subject, and maybe I'll just go more towards the humanities. Or whatever. I'm from humanities, so I'm definitely not dismissing it. But so Are you seeing that when you're reaching out to these 12-year-olds and you're doing these challenges and everything? Are you seeing that there are less girls, because at that age it's still girls, showing interest? Are you doing anything specific to try and reach out to the girls as well?
Absolutely, but I will tell you, I think that stigma, I don't know if it's fair to say it's passed. However, when we engage with our schools, from the school-age students at 12 through our college and universities, the teams are showing that this is not a male-dominated world. We just had an event recently. It was our high school challenge, and I'm going to get this wrong, but there was a team of all girls that showed up, and I don't recall off the top of my head where they finished, but it was a computer science programming-based autonomous system innovation challenge, and they all had T-shirts on that said, Girls Who Program, I think was what the T-shirt said. So I may have the words not exactly correct then, but it was something along that line. So it was an entire team of just female, scientists, engineer-focused individuals that just were outstanding. Mm-hmm. So when we recruit, the strength of the women candidates in STEM fields is just tremendous. And I personally work a number of job fairs, and so I like to be in touch with the folks at the college age. I know they think that I am well beyond the point of college, and that is for sure. But being able to understand those fresh perspectives that our college students bring to the table, each year we'll hire 70% of our new hires will be new college grads. So it's certainly incumbent upon me to stay vested in their focus and what they're looking for in a career, and then help them understand how to marry those desires to our mission. And talk about those opportunities. But I can tell you that each and everywhere we go, whether it's sixth graders, 12-year-olds, or budding college graduates at all degree levels, the women candidates that we see are tremendous, and it carries through their careers. I mean, a significant part of my leadership team, great diversity on leadership team, and certainly are made ranks of women.
Right, and are you seeing? Throughout the years, are you seeing changes as well, more and more women or not?
I've certainly seen it across the course of my career. So as in my early leadership days, I think we struggled to attract female engineers and scientists into parts of our work. The amount of candidates coming out of the college universities made that so competitive. But where we are today, I think, it is something that we certainly focus on. We have our own resident society of women engineers chapter, for example. So we certainly are very focused on growing women leaders in our organization. But I will tell you that the candidate pool solves a whole lot of that for us.
Mm-hmm. And so another thing that came up in the first episode on Women in Defense that we did with my colleague, journalist colleague and friend, was that, And I certainly have that as well as a women journalist in defense. So my first studies were post-conflict reconstruction. That was my PhD. And a lot of people look at me now and think, how do you go from peace to destruction? Because that's usually, sadly, what military field is.
Peace through deterrence is our and strength, right, is our focus for sure.
Yeah, well, exactly. But a lot of people think military is all about destruction. So are you also encountering this kind of pushback from people sometimes when you try to reach out, that they misunderstand what the military world is about and what it could actually bring and mean?
That's a great question. And I think we're not unlike other business sectors, in that you have to reach the part of the population that is in concert with your mission. Mm-hmm. And I will interview candidates and talk to candidates that say, hey, that's not for me. But there are more than enough folks out there who absolutely understand the importance of the role that we play. Because we start with a focus on technical excellence. Mm-hmm. Right? If you want to be a good scientist or engineer or mathematician, if you want to do programming in an environment where you really get to apply your skills and grow your credentials, we're great for that. We do have a little different application for that product than if you're out in the corporate world, maybe. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, a strong military is what allows the United States of America, and in partnership and concert with our allies, to go ensure that we have that peace in the world. But it's also incumbent upon us to be ready to use that strength when we need to. And I will tell you, there are a lot of folks at all experience levels, they're very much in tune with that. But like any business, you will encounter those candidates that may say, well, that just may not be for me. And that's okay.
Absolutely, yeah. But it's always interesting to see people's perception sure. of our field.
I'm all in on it, obviously, yeah. right? And absolutely appreciate the opportunity to contribute to the defense of our nation and the stability, you know, in the free world. So look for folks who want to do the same.
Absolutely, yes. The other question I was thinking about as well as you were speaking was, and we discussed this before the recording, was, you know, a lot of people will say, okay, so a podcast on women in defense, and we're also, again, talking about gender equality, yada, yada, yada. What does it mean to have more mixed teams? Is there really something that can be added when you have different ways of thinking, different ways of seeing the world? Is that relevant? Is it something that you're seeing?
Yeah, absolutely, and I've seen it across the course of my career. And again, you know, the best and brightest come from all walks of life. And so I think it starts there. And when you're in the talent-based business like we are, we're an intellectual business. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we put a product out the door that actually is tangible and physical and has a purpose, but you don't get there without a very smart team to put that together. So at the point that you isolate members of certain communities from that world, you just cut off part of the best and brightest. Mm-hmm. So that's always my starting point with respect to that. You know, it's just every element of what makes up people for sure. You know, and I think, you know, I've often, you know, you've heard, well, someone may solve a math problem differently based on where they grew up or what their gender is or whatever. I don't know if I buy that, right? Calculus is kind of calculus. But in terms of a problem-solving approach, for sure. We're all raised differently. We all grew up in different kinds of environments. And we have different training at different universities, and that part matters as well. So bringing that diverse problem-solving thinking and personal perspectives to the environment is important. Just, you know, traveling here this morning, talking through a number of personnel discussions in our organization with my deputy, and you know, we both know the same folks, we know them from the same angles, but we might have a different take on the best way to help them out. So just this morning, we were bouncing those ideas off of each other. And I don't know if it's because, you know, one of us is a man, one of us is a woman as an engineer and professional bringing this to the fight. But at the end of the day, it's what the total package of what makes us up gives us a little different problem solving skills for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I see this also in the as a journalist, my point of view. Of course, as you said, it's also the background. Yeah. So I don't come from a defense background. It's not something I was really interested in until someone actually told me, could you write an article on frigates and destroyers? And I was like, I have no idea what any of those things are, but sure, I'll give it a try.
We're in the right place this week.
Yes, exactly. This was 9 years ago. Okay. Since then, I'm much more well-versed.
You're a ship design expert by now, right? Yeah.
Exactly. And that ship sailed. but yeah, I mean, I can see that the way I approach sometimes certain topics, the way to write about them can be different from some of my male colleagues. And it doesn't mean one's better than the other. It just means, again, we're bringing different sure. perspectives. So
I think, you know, this conversation always has to start for me that as a leader, you have to deeply care about all those around you.
Yes.
And part of that is really getting to know every member of your team and your workforce. Now, with 5,000, I won't sit here and tell you that I know each one personally, but I know a whole lot of them.
Yeah.
And certainly our leadership team, we all spend a lot of time knowing what drives the other because we're in a very fast-paced, high-demand environment that is subject to get more fast-paced and higher demand at any given moment. So to be successful, you have to truly know who you work with, right? And have built those relationships in advance of the chaos or in advance of the challenges you're going to deal with. And I don't know that that's gender specific, mm-hmm. But it certainly matters to have a diverse team that you can go get after those challenges with.
Yes, absolutely. So we've talked about a lot about attracting talent. What about retaining talent? Are you seeing also differences in the way that perhaps you do things to try and retain women sure. In the workforce?
We have spent a significant amount of time thinking through that, because there will be times, we find that there are different times in women's careers that may play out differently than men's careers specifically. And we've had a number of focus groups in our work over the last 10 or 15 years to really look at that. And the overarching statistics say that 3 to 5 years out of school, independent of where you're from, what your major was, your gender, any of your physical makeup, you're gonna start to figure out where you want to be in life, right? And so if you're from the West Coast and you move to the East Coast, you may decide you want to be back with your family or not. So that churn in someone's career in the 3 to 5 year mark is kind of consistent and independent of statistics. So what we make sure that we do with people across the board is invest in them from day one. Mm-hmm. So all of our new workforce members that come in our STEM fields, they're going to go on rotational assignments. They're going to learn the totality of our portfolio, and we want them to know that we didn't hire you for a job, we hired you for a career, and we want to invest in you across this portfolio. We pay for folks to go get the graduate education that we talked about in the leadership training. And then we expect our leaders to all be strong mentors and to be in tune with each of our members of our workforce to help through their individual development plans know what they want to achieve. Mm-hmm. Again, I think, as we grow people and as leaders, it's all about balancing the want, the need, the know-how, right? Mm-hmm. Our individual skill sets and attaching that to some organizational need. But again, that all starts with the heart, as I began this conversation with. So those personal interests, individual skill sets, and organizational need all have to come together if we want to be successful in putting products out to our warfighters. So to do that, we have to invest in our people. That investment is in time, it's in money, and the advanced education for sure. But probably the most important is marrying folks with the work they want to do. And that is our best recruiting tool. When we can have our folks align with the kind of things that they want to be doing, and certainly in an environment that is supportive and fun, right? I mean, I really believe, it's work, but work should be fun. We spend more time doing that than anything else. So that needs to be enjoyable.
But anything specific regarding women? Because I know sometimes there are issues in terms of, like, maybe they want to go on maternity leave.
Sure.
So I don't know how it works for the center, but I know that it's a big issue when it comes to university and research. You know, they may go on maternity leave, they may lose their spot, it may be harder to get tenure, so that's university. But are there any issues
I wouldn't
noted?
Say that they're issues. It's certainly something that we pay attention to, mm-hmm. but it's for mothers and fathers that we see in our workspace. And I think that's probably evened out more over the years in terms of the impacts on mothers and fathers. You know, in the United States, there's maternity leave and paternity leave available for parents of that's 12 weeks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a long time compared to, my three kids were born well in advance of that opportunity, and I've been trying to collect on it retroactively, but that doesn't work. And for those listening, it is an attempt at humor. I think the tools are there to allow us to smooth out those curves in one's career. And we're not going to expect someone, if one of our women leaders or women science engineers, they're growing their family and they need time for that. We have a number of ways of working through those times in our lives. And just similarly for some of our senior leaders that are now dealing with elder care, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know that the challenges seem to be very similar for our folks. And, and today I don't know that it's a lot different for in terms of an organization. Certainly men and women have different roles to play in growing the family there. But, as an organization, we support all.
Yes. So just one last question. In terms of the innovation that, comes out of the center and the projects you work on, is there any, sometimes also, are there projects that look at specifically facilitating also women or looking at women and the way that they work and facilitating also like their access to, I don't know how to explain this, but obviously we're talking Navy, so it's not weapons, but in the armed forces, sometimes there are articles also about how the suits don't fit the body shape of a woman,
right.
Or even in the naval domain, Saab has recently come up with a seat for a submarine commander where they, it's more like body shape that can fit 90% apparently of body shape, men and women. Is there anything like this that you look
well,
at? Or
in our civilian environment, right, no uniforms, so
yeah.
Folks get to choose what they, what their own attire would be for sure. So not necessarily, but we do have a number of special emphasis programs that, we have a a special interest program for women that focuses on our women's careers. We have the Society of Women Engineers that I mentioned previously. So there are certainly some special emphasis areas there, but I think what's more important is that we make sure that we're investing that time and resources that I've already talked about a little bit, but translate that to the individual level. For example, we just had our honorary awards event here within the last month, where we recognized about 10% of our workforce, nearly 10% of our workforce, and one of our top award recipients happens to be one of our female technical leaders, and she was our chief technology officer, just now moved into a larger organizational leadership responsibility, began her career with us as a secretary, admin assistant, and just completed her doctorate in systems engineering, right? So all through our organization, right? Our leaders 25 years ago saw potential and drive, and we made sure we poured into that individual and invested in her growth. And she made the conversion from an administrative path to an engineering technical STEM kind of career path. And like I said, now is a PhD and leading, a large chunk of our organization, just coming off leading as our chief technology officer, right? So those individual examples then shine the light back on how the organization is successful at doing that.
Amazing. Right. Well, we're getting to the end of our time here together. Is there anything that you want to say to any of the little girls out there or women out there who don't know about this job but you would like to attract?
Yeah, I think from my standpoint, from the girls to the women, the opportunity to contribute to STEM fields is there. We need you. We need you in the fight. We need the depth and the candidate pool. And we're excited about the skills and problem-solving techniques that all bring to the table. So, Alex, thank you for giving me a chance to talk to this today. It's a subject that we're very passionate about within the Dahlgren Division, across the warfare centers in the Department of the Navy, our Navy Research Development Establishment, and certainly the Department of the Navy overall.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Dale, for your time. And maybe we can do an update in a few years' time,
yes,
see how it's going.
I think so, yeah. Alex, thank you very much.
Thanks. Yeah.